Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about clowns. Today, instead of beginning with a news story, as is our customary way of beginning a show about the biblical take on current events, today we're going to begin with a song. So, if you're listening in at home, try to pay especially close attention to the lyrics, because they are significant.
Somewhere past the pandemic, when we're free, there's a life I remember, full of activity. Somewhere past the pandemic, masks will come off. No more need for a nose swab every time we cough. As we are gathered here today, COVID's toll has hit and sent us reeling. But partners like the ones right here will help to make the pathway clear to find a true healing. Somewhere past the pandemic, life will resume. We'll all complain about the traffic, forgetting how we hated Zoom. Pandemic, we'll hug our friends and thank the people and science that brought the pandemic's end. My dozen years are almost through, but it's been great to work with you. Let's end COVID now. Thank you, HHS.
Produced by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
So, if you don't know who sang that song, you might be surprised to find out that the artist was Dr. Francis Collins, the outgoing head of the National Institutes of Health. Collins is famous for being part of the team that originally mapped the human genome, so scientifically, this guy is a heavy hitter, and more than that, he's an evangelical Christian. He's been a bureaucrat, also, for about 12 years. And I'm not sure if Francis Collins has always written and performed unironically cringy songs, or if that's just a result of his time spent in Washington, but that song was something that demonstrates the widening divide between everyday Christians and the elites. It's not even fair to call it a divide anymore. It's more like a chasm, and if things aren't rectified soon, it will be a great gulf that no one can cross. But perhaps you're confused by what I mean. Okay, you might be thinking, yeah, the song was a bit dorky, but Collins is just a nice guy, and he's a believer, and so we have to tolerate anything that he does, no matter what the results are, because he's a nice Christian. I know lots of Christians for whom that's their way of assessing the theology of others. Friends, how many times have you heard this excuse for bad theology? Oh, well, they love Jesus, or they're just trying to help, or they really mean well. Who cares? We excuse all manner of bad theology, even heretical theology, because people are nice and say that they love Jesus. Look at what Dr. Collins is saying. Pay attention to the lyrics, and not only the lyrics, but the tune to which the lyrics are set. The song is about somewhere past the pandemic, but set to the tune of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is disconcerting considering that Somewhere Over the Rainbow is a teen girl's fantasy, which incidentally has been co-opted by sexual perverts and deviants for decades. Thus, what Collins is saying by his tune choice, never mind the lyrics, I don't know if we'll have time to get into those, but he's saying that the best way for an evangelical Christian scientist to say farewell to the American people is by telling them that getting past the pandemic is a fantasy, and also gay pride. Now, I'll admit that it's possible that Collins is just really bad at understanding how poetry works and doesn't see the reality that saying, let's end COVID now is the final strain of a song while setting it to the tune that says that everything in the song lives in an impossible make-believe alternate universe is a bit self-defeating. It's possible he doesn't see that. I'd say it's unlikely because Collins is a very smart man who's pretty talented with the guitar, by the way. And as a Christian, he would have been exposed to poetry and literature and metaphorical modes of thinking to a degree that many other scientists aren't. It's also possible that Collins didn't catch the connection between the gay pride movement and the tune he chose. And that, for an evangelical, that's a bit odd. All that is possible. But is it likely? Is it likely that Collins was just unaware of the contradictory messaging? I doubt it. I think he just didn't care. He liked the tune and the lyrical framework, and he decided to use it. I don't think that Collins is laughing maniacally in his lair about all the sheeple that didn't realize that the pandemic would never end, and that he made us all think that there was an end in sight, but there was really no end. You know, he's cackling as he's, you know, stroking his cat. No. I think that Collins just came up with the lyrics and went with it and didn't care at all about the mixed messaging. And doesn't that seem to fit the data a lot better? In fact, I think it's the perfect ironic summary to the entire American bureaucracy's take on COVID. It's the perfect summary to the evangelical elite's take on COVID. They just don't care about the mixed messaging. They don't care if, when, and how often or how badly they contradict themselves. They don't care because they know they can get away with it. They know that they can. They know that they can contradict themselves in the same speech, in the same paragraph. Every word can contradict the song's tune to make it incoherent, and they don't care because they can get away with it. Why can they get away with it? Because they're not trying to convince people. They're trying to intimidate them with their degrees and their authority. They're trying to overawe people into submission. They aren't making cogent arguments for their policies. They're just telling you to shut up and do as you're told. And if you ever decide to question these naked emperors, you'll be told that you're killing grandma or that you aren't acting like Jesus. Now look, if you followed this show and my writing and preaching, you know that I have repeatedly said that people need to make prudential health decisions for themselves. I've said repeatedly that we are our brother's keepers and that we have a moral responsibility to prevent spreading communicable diseases if they could have effects that outweigh the benefits of not taking certain precautions. I have said publicly, repeatedly, in print and on the radio, that there is a biblical case for vaccine mandates. So I think I'm coming to this conversation as someone who has repeatedly demonstrated that I'm in good faith and willing to hear arguments. But I haven't been met with arguments, not least with arguments that can withstand scrutiny. And the evidence that the arguments for the outsized reaction to the coronavirus is the fact that our elites in government, media, and the church can repeatedly contradict themselves, repeatedly not follow the rules they make for others, repeatedly employ threats and bully tactics, and yet nothing has happened. Fauci's still in power. Biden said he's the real president. All the evangelicals that have told you that if you don't wear a mask, wear two masks in the car and never go outside in a public space again. No, stay in your house and never go to church again. No, get the vaccine. No, get the vaccine again. No, get the booster. No, get another booster. No, get another booster. They've told you all these things and people still listen to them and respect them and act like these are serious people. All these evangelical elites who have beclowned themselves by going along with the government and shutting down churches and dragging us along a never-ending series of hoops to jump through while we ruin our economy, psychologically damage our kids, ruin the education of children, increase deaths of despair like suicide and drug overdose, and increase domestic and particularly child abuse, these elites have never faced any real consequences. Nobody is out there demanding that these folks resign. Nobody is telling them that they have demonstrated a disqualifying lack of wisdom and discernment. Nobody is telling them that they need to answer for why they thought that the benefits of ruining the lives of hundreds of millions was worth it. There's no way to prove that the masks or the lockdowns did anything, whatever, to prevent COVID deaths. More than that, there has been an estimated 800,000 COVID deaths in the U.S. total, and that's over the course of about 2 years. Now, in those 2 years, there have been an estimated 6.5 to 7 million deaths. Official stats aren't in yet, but the estimates from 2020, taking that, doubling that, and then adding a few more as total U.S. deaths to give us a 2021 number, and considering that these numbers increase by about 42,000 every year since 2009. So that means that even with the lower number of total deaths, the 800,000 deaths since COVID started make up about 12% of total deaths. Not 12% of the population, 12% of total deaths. Others have estimated total deaths with COVID much lower. And that's with other causes of death increasing as well. And here's where it becomes crucial to pay attention. And I'm quoting here. However, the researchers also found substantial increases in the numbers of deaths attributed to other leading causes of death. For example, deaths from heart disease, which ranked as the leading cause of death in the United States in 2020, increased by 4.8% from 659,041 in 2019 to 690,882 in 2020, making the largest increase in heart disease deaths since 2012. Similarly, researchers found deaths increased by 15.4% for diabetes, 11.1% for unintentional injury, and 9.8% for Alzheimer's disease. That's according to advisory.com, by the way. And when we look at those deaths, that suggests that there are a lot of lockdown deaths. These are deaths of despair. And this is not taking into account the incalculable cost of what it did to kids for them to not see faces for a year on end. But more than all of that is the theological cost that Christians have paid. We're so terrified of death of any kind, that we're willing to stop worshiping God. Worse than that, Christians wanted government to force other Christians to stop worshiping God. And what for? What is the rational basis for these policies? What was the rational basis for masks? Why do we do all this? What was the rational basis for masks? They'd stop transmission. But when the real-world data demonstrated that they didn't stop transmission, and people pointed out, the elites told us to just shut up and obey. What was a rational basis for lockdowns and taking away American civil liberties without due process? Well, to stop transmission. Except, one, it's arguable this was a bad policy. And two, it's arguable it had no real longitudinal effect because diseases don't just hang around for 15 days and go away. When people pointed this out, we were told that we weren't acting like Jesus because Jesus would mask up and lock down. What was the rational basis for vaccine mandates? To stop transmission. But again, like every government policy, it hasn't done the thing they said justified forcing you to do it. These people are clowns. They're not serious people. That's why the most prominent Christian medical scientist in the world ends his tenure with the disturbing self-contradictory ditty. He tells us to end COVID now. How, Francis? How? By doing all the stuff you guys have been saying to do for 2 years that hasn't worked? By panicking about every variant? By giving government unfettered power? By refusing to enter the public square and answer simple questions about prudence and the costs and benefits of government policies? By ignoring prudential arguments from experts and non-experts alike? None of these things will stop COVID because they haven't. All these government policies have done, they've done more harm than good. That's all they've done. Now, look, I'm not saying that lockdowns didn't save any lives. I'm not saying that shutting down nursing homes didn't save any lives. I'm not saying that a vaccine mandate wouldn't save any lives. What I am saying is that the costs have far outweighed the benefits, with some serious estimates saying that the costs of lockdowns in the United States have been at least 5 times worse than the benefit. And the reality is that it's more likely about 90 times worse. What price have evangelical elites paid for advocating policies that are orders of magnitude worse than the alternatives? What price have they paid for unthinkingly, unqualifiedly asserting their authority and telling all of us peons and serfs that we need to just do as we're told or we hate Jesus and want to kill grandma? Friends, the elites in this country are clowns. They are fools who despise wisdom and are incapable and unworthy to make serious decisions that affect your life and well-being. Now, as far as government goes, that's what we expect. But the obsequious clownery from people who pompously make their sinaitic pronouncements is laughable, except nobody's laughing, which makes it lamentable. The chasm between evangelical elites is tottering on the unbridgeable. As our elites advocate demonstrably failed policies, push wokeism in colleges and seminaries, backslide from the Bible on sexual morality and abortion, advocate Darwinism, plagiarize, embezzle, and mismanage, they somehow have the autocratic audacity to somehow browbeat the lowbrows if anyone dares to question them. Christian elites are clowns. They are not serious people. Stop taking them seriously. Stop buying their books. Stop going to their conferences. Stop visiting their websites. Stop trusting them to speak from on high. Stop the hero worship. Stop living your lives based upon the nostrums, maxims, and dictums of these fools. They're worse than useless because they're not content to just leave things alone. They do actual damage to the cause of Christ in their desperate and pathetic attempt to be loved by all the swells as they seek secular sainthood. Of course, there are dangers on the other side. Active anti-intellectualism has hurt Christianity, and there is an ugly side to populism. But corrupt shepherds are always worse for the flock than unruly sheep, and right now the shepherds seem to be little more than a pack of heretical hirelings. We need a better class of pastors in this country. I'm not sure we deserve it, or that we'll get it, but it is what we need. And I hope and pray that we all will seek to have better pastors in this country. And I hope you'll join us again next week for another exciting episode of Truth and Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day. To his glory.